From Eden by Fry, Volume 2, Heart, Chapter 3, Chaos. This makes me wonder what, in a multiverse of all possible universes, my life is like right now, in the world where Benjamin and I are together. So often have I tried to find him in others, repeatedly have I attempted to find him himself, that I've lost all concept of what the reality would be of us actually having done what other people do. Do other people do this? It's certainly the impression I get. Other people I know meet someone, fall in love, have some ups and downs, decide to give it a go, stick together or sometimes not, and if they don't, then most likely they have a break and then either give it another go or do so with somebody else. I have good examples at close range of things working out well between people all around me. My family especially are exemplary, so it shouldn't be difficult. Still, it mystifies me. Benjamin has fallen out with his father. This much I know. I know this much because the last number I find in my old address book for him is his old home number. And at one point, while I'm in the country, I phone that number and I get his dad on the phone, who tells me that he doesn't know where his son is, nor how to contact him. He says this quite categorically, and I'm surprised, of course, and a bit stunned, and about to end the conversation. But before I do, I ask whether anybody else might know how to contact him, and he says, yes, his mother might know. Ah, I say, and would he happen to still have a number for his mother? I sense I need to tread carefully, as I don't want to upset or offend him, and I feel sorry that they're no longer together, but at least that offers a plausible explanation as to why his father does not know where he is or how to contact him. His parents must have separated many years ago, maybe on bad terms. But this number here, he says, she'll be back later. She's at work now. This now saddens more than it puzzles me, and it puzzles me a lot. Clearly, Benjamin's mother and father are still together, still living in the same house where I once or twice came to see him, where I met both of them once or twice, where, in fact, I interviewed his dad for my final school project, which I wrote on racism. But while his mother may know how to get in touch with him, the father not only doesn't know, he obviously doesn't want to know either. His son is dead to him. A wave of abject sadness washes over me. He is, has always been, so alive to me. Should it surprise that our first love is our strongest, our most intensely felt, most devastating, and also most exalted? To this day, I remember getting drunk on coffee with him on the sofa. That seems surreal now, but we drank so much coffee over so many hours, all through the night until it was getting light outside. I started feeling high, caffeine and adrenaline and serotonin. And that other thing. Is there that other thing, that indescribable thing, that thing we sing songs about and write poems over and feel we could die for? I phoned up again a day or two later, or maybe it was later that day, and spoke to the mother, who remembered me and may have remembered me fondly. She certainly sounded warm and kind, and she said, yes, if I were to write him a letter, she would forward it on to him. That might work. I wrote him a letter, and she forwarded it on to him, and nothing happened for a very long time. And I remembered, as I spoke to his mother, and before I wrote the letter, the birthday for which I had sent him a flower. He lived outside Zurich then, I outside Basel. His birthday was, and still is, 6 days before mine, and because I couldn't see him on his birthday, I went out and bought him a flower. I can't be sure now what kind of flower it was, but I like to think, and I'm fairly certain, it was a yellow rose. And I asked the florist for one of these small vials that would keep the flower fresh for a while. And I sealed this around the stem of the flower and wrapped it in tissues in case it should leak, and sealed that in foil, I believe, and then put the flower into a long box. And I must have used some padding, and then I posted it to him with my birthday wishes. I didn't wonder then, but I wondered now what his mother made of this at the time. I wrote him a letter and sent it to his mother, and she forwarded it to him, and nothing happened for a very long time, until one Sunday the phone rang, and it was Benjamin. Out of the blue, except for the letter, of course. He'd received it, and now he was living in Guckisberg. He'd moved to Guckisberg because of the song. Did I know it? I didn't, but I know it now. We talked for maybe 4 or 5 hours. I don't remember what we talked about, but then that was that kind of connection where you can talk for 4 or 5 hours and not remember what you talked about, nor really care. For those 4 or 5 hours, it was as if he were there. And all of a sudden, I can feel it ease the pain of not knowing what had become of Benjamin. He's not had an easy ride. I have a son, he says. I have a tooth missing. He's been through addiction and rehab and back and other things. He lives with his partner, who isn't the mother of his son. You've done a good thing here, he said, meaning my writing to him. And after the afternoon had passed with us talking, he said, and now I'm going to get drunk. We were a bit drunk already again, both of us, this time on the beers we each started to open, he in Guckisberg, I in Alscourt. And I'm going to hear Jane Birkin in concert, I said, and it was true. He wasn't online, but he would write back to me now, he said, but I didn't think he would. And he didn't. After a few months or so, maybe a year, I thought I'd just write to him one more time, although I was myself no longer sure of the wisdom of doing so. And I sent another letter, this time directed to him at the address he'd given me on the Guckisberg. It came back as not delivered. The addressee has moved away. But now I don't mind. My heart is light and free. I hope before either of us dies, I'll see him again, maybe when we're quite old. Maybe when we're quite old, we can sit together on a bench or in a lakeside cafe and spend a whole day talking. Maybe getting drunk a little on whatever. I look at George looking at me, and I remember I'm not alone. I've never been alone. I've always had George. But George has been very much on his own at times. He has chosen a lone path, and I can't blame him for that. Tell me about Benjamin, I want to say, but I know now everything I need to know about him, and I know that George knows much less now than I. I walk into a room full of people. It's the Christmas bazaar at the Steiner School in Zurich. I've gone there with a friend from Basel to visit a couple of people we'd met at the Whitsun camp earlier in the year and stayed in touch with. I don't remember anything else about the day, not how we arranged to meet or who else was there. Most likely we'd just arrived, and most likely we'd said in the cafe around then. The cafe is just a classroom converted for the day, or maybe it's a small hall. I remember the feel of a converted classroom. The room is full. There's a table with five or six people at it in conversation. Two or three of them we already know. To the others, we introduce ourselves. One of them turns around. Ich bitte Benjamin. My world has never been the same again. Tell me, George, I finally say, the mojito giving me license to talk. What do you make of the heart?